Accession number 18802, Reel 7.
Brigadier Cowan, Reel 7. Was there anything that you did manage to do of importance while you were at Oxford in the OTC?
No, I don't think so. It was a strange time at Oxford in many ways, as I think I mentioned at the beginning. 90-odd% of the undergraduates were ex-service people. Most of them, many of them, a good deal older than me. Some of whom I'd known during the war, and their sole concern was to get back into an academic life as quickly as possible and get on with their degrees, and so they weren't remotely interested in the OTC, and as I said, we therefore concentrated our activities on local schools. I attended meetings of an outfit called the Military Delegacy, but I don't remember too much about that. I mean, I wasn't required to contribute very much. The commanding officer went too. And again, we were just there because historically the commanding officer and the adjutant had always gone to these things. But I imagine before the war, they took probably a much larger part than they were doing then.
What was the attitude in the schools? Was there a keen interest in military training for boys and...
Yes, I think there was. The schools we went to were Radley, Stowe, Magdalen College School and St Edward's School, Oxford. And I think the fact we were able to take some very clapped out armoured cars, of which we had three, some 25 pounders that were in fact in very good nick, we had four of those, and the fact we were able to produce some kit on the playing fields and people could do something rather than just sort of square bashing or whatever it was, I think they were interested. If you were to ask me how many of those people eventually fetched up in the forces, I haven't the remotest idea. I'm really not the remotest idea. But certainly one or two of them were showing an interest in that direction.
So you're really planting seed corn.
Yes, yes. And we were a friendly bunch. And I think all the people from the Corps, the officers and in particular the NCOs, and I think there were only two private soldiers, but they all wore different cap badges and they all mucked in with each other. And they thought they belonged to a useful outfit. And I think we all behaved as a result of that in a helpful and enthusiastic manner.
I think your next move was in April 1949 to Catterick to do a signals course. Had you asked for that, or was that simply decided by higher authority?
I think I may have been consulted, although I rather doubt it. No. 1RB, 1st Battalion of the Rifle Brigade, to which I was then going to go later, needed a signals officer. And somebody, I suppose, said, well, he'll be suitable. Why they thought that, I have no idea, because I couldn't be less technical. But on the other hand, having got there, fortunately, there was a sapper. And he and I became, in very quick and close rivalry, to get top marks on this course. And that, I think, probably did us both good, because we worked very hard indeed. We took things like telephone exchanges home to fiddle about with the wires and plugs and things overnight. Jennifer thought this was hysterical. And the very old-fashioned radios we were playing with then, he and I became really very expert in, although I say it myself, in manipulating them and getting the best out of them. 19 set being the most obvious one. And there was also a thing called a 22 set, which is the other big one, or big one by infantry standards. And anyway, we both fetched up with very good marks on the course, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Was the 22 set man-packable, or was it mainly vehicle-mounted?
Mainly vehicle-mounted, but you could make it man-packable.
Well, what was the difference between the two sets, the 19 and the 22, in operational terms?
In operational terms, very little. I always thought the 19 set was better. 22 set, I think, was a little bit more modern. I suppose with that number it probably was. But I always thought, and I spent hours in the next couple of years, I mean, literally hours, fiddling about and tuning these sets on exercises and so on. And I thought the 19 set was superb. And I much preferred it to the 22 because I got a better performance out of it.
What sort of range could you get out of the 19 set?
It varied. Depended on the country. It depended on whether you've got a big area or a small area, or whether you were trying to go sort of with a long wire. In theory, I mean, for ordinary operational purposes, if you were lucky, you could get 15 or 20 miles. If you were lucky. At night, when all the muck came down, you might be lucky to get 2 miles. You just couldn't tell. It depended on the countryside. But with a Skywave aerial, I probably get round the world.
I mean, with the normal aerial, you would fit if you were doing a movement on foot, the whip aerial.
Yes.
But, I mean, was it important to get line of sight?
Oh, no.
Stations. No, it wasn't.
No. I mean, very rarely did get line of sight. But we're now looking ahead a little bit beyond my course into my next job as signal officer of 1RB.
Yeah. How long was the course?
3 months.
Do you remember what the syllabus was?
There was an enormous emphasis placed on radio procedure, RT procedure, as it was called, which, again, being immodest, I became very expert at and minded about, because, you know, we were told all about security implications and so on. And it was something that I insisted on when I got to the battalion, that people did properly.
Is this voice code, mainly?
No, it was just making sure that, not a code exactly, but that you weren't... that you were speaking in guarded terms on the radio, as indeed one's encouraged to do on a telephone these days if it's not scrambled.
Was it all in clear, or did you do...
We spoke in clear,
yes.
But there were some very simple codes that one could use. One in particular I remember called Slidex, which is merely a thing where you get cards and you have different cursor settings and so on.
Substitution code, really.
Substitution code,
yes.
But I mean a very, very low grade.
And was there a thing called GridX?
I don't remember it.
It's similar, mainly for transmitting positions.
There was something, I don't remember it being called GridX. Mm. I think we usually use SlideX. Mm. But there was something I remember that was simpler than SlideX because you didn't have to use cursors. And I don't think it was called GridX, and I can't remember what it was called.
Did you do any Morse?
Yes. Mm. Not a lot, and I didn't become very expert at Morse because it was not a major requirement, but one had to achieve a certain standard, which you know, I managed to do. I didn't enjoy Morse all that much. I don't think we did semaphore.
Presumably the days of heliograph were long gone.
Yes.
So it's mainly signalling procedure and voice procedures and so forth.
Yes. And the technicalities of the telephone. We did a certain amount of line laying,
yes,
which again was straightforward, provided you observed the rules. Telephone exchange operating, a simple 10-line exchange, and we're not talking of anything complicated.
Would that be a company level or a battalion level?
Battalion level. And, you know, there was a battalion establishment allowed for 4 people for line laying purposes. In fact, we trained everybody to do everything, rather obviously. But, we did that. But we had to learn a certain amount about the inside of the set, so to do simple maintenance if something went wrong.
One of the main problems with sets has always been the batteries giving out at critical moments. What sort of endurance could you get out of a battery in a 19 set?
Well, Again, I'm looking beyond the course to when I got to 1RB. 1RB was a motor battalion, and so the battalion headquarters had two headquarter vehicles, half tracks, and they each carried two sets, and one was the main vehicle and the other was a spare backup and was used sometimes for advance parties and so on. That carried a 19 set for the forward link and a 52 set, big Canadian set, much more powerful, for the rear link to brigade headquarters. And each of those sets carried on the front bumper a charging set, a 300 watt charger. And so whenever we stopped, the thing charged. And so, you know, if we did run out of batteries, that was a very black mark.
But I mean, it's different, isn't it, if you're actually on foot. You're moving around.
There's a different thing. You'd use different sorts of sets with pack batteries and so on. Of course, we had some of those for the infantry row.
Of those 3 months at Kattering, I mean, how much of the time was spent on theory and how much was spent actually on practical exercises?
Well, I suppose you could say the RT procedure was theoretical in many ways.
Yes.
I mean, it was learning by rote, really, initially, and then just practicing it and throwing it about amongst yourselves. Practical exercises on the ground, I honestly can't remember how many there were, but there were enough. And I would say that we did a certain amount of theory on the set, but again, the tuning was highly practical.
It was moving the dial and then getting the cursor
exactly.
onto the right notch to lock on.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I found it a very rewarding business. But it's just, they happened to catch me at the right moment.
And it appealed to you at the time.
Yeah. And of course, having got to the battalion, and having enjoyed it myself, I made jolly sure everybody else enjoyed it. The signal lot in particular, of which we were about 50. And scattered around the companies and so on. But I'm happy to say we had the reputation of being the best signal set up in Rhine Army, including the armoured regiments.
It's always the gunners who have the reputation for superb signals, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you have gunners on your course as well as infantry and engineers?
It was an all-arms course.
Yes.
I mean, what arms were represented, I really can't remember. It was run by the Royal Signals. But you see, that was another interesting thing. It's probably very naughty to say it, but at the time I'm talking about in 1949-50 in Germany, I'm sure that the big the divisional headquarters, army headquarters and so on, I'm sure their Royal Corps of Signals people were very highly professional and skilled. But I had a small team of Royal Signals in the battalion. I can't remember how many there were then now. There was a sergeant, a corporal and a few others. And to be honest, my signalers were a bloody sight better than they were. And so I'm afraid that, as far as I was concerned, they were relegated from the headquarter vehicle where they were meant to be. They were meant to man the rear link, and we did it ourselves much more efficiently than they did.
What did you do with them?
We found useful things for them to do, like, I mean, you mentioned battery charging. Well, they were fully responsible for all the battery charging. And we did, obviously, the ones that were stationed on the vehicles. But all the bigger charging machinery and so on, that was all run by them.
So they were doing technical maintenance and...
Yes.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know, they did occasional sort of operating as well, but they, I'm afraid, just weren't good enough.
Hmm. Who actually instructed you on the course? Was that done by Royal Signals personnel?
No, I think it was mixed. No, I can't really remember. I seem to remember an Irishman, an infantry Irishman, was our sort of course instructor, a captain. They were mixed, and certainly there were Royal Signals instructors. I think there were some Armoured Corps instructors and some gunner and infantry instructors. It was an all-arms course, but run at the School of Signals.
Now, thinking back to what you remember of wartime, in particular in Italy and so on, had there been any significant changes in signalling, in the equipment available or in the technique by the time you went on this course?
No, I think the each of the different levels of set have been upgraded, and I think perhaps we were more proficient in operating them. But the big change came some years later, when everything went on to FM.
What sort of frequencies were you working on at this stage then?
Dear me.
Are you on shortwave?
No, we were medium.
Medium.
Mm. And I honestly can't remember what the frequencies were at all. Mm. But we had some of the Manpack sets by then were on FM.
Yes. Did you discuss such things as interception and countermeasures against eavesdropping?
Not technical measures as such, no. I think we merely relied on the procedure element and getting that technically correct, which immediately built in some security, but only very low-level security, I mean, under 24 hours worth. But probably by then you'd moved anyway.
So it's really a question of presumably keeping your transmissions as short as possible.
Yes.
And as clear as possible.
Yes, and as correct as possible, and, you know, using the codes, the slide decks, etc., when it was appropriate to do so. But I think if you ask, you know, did I concentrate on countermeasures, the answer to that must be no. I concentrated much more on getting through.
Yeah. Was there any sort of formal examination or assessment process at the end of the course?
I don't remember. Mm. I mean, I finished up with a D. I remember that, but I don't remember how it was arrived at. Mm.
So after doing the course, you then went down to your battalion, and they were in Germany, weren't they?
Yes.
At that time.
Yes. And I inherited the signals set up.
What condition were they in when you arrived?
Not bad, but they could be made a lot better. Mm. And they needed more of them.
What improvements did you think were necessary?
I think probably the will to get through. Too many of them I found, you know, they said, oh, you know, the set's US or the ground's wrong or something's wrong, we can't get through, too bad. That, I'm afraid, was not the system I worked on. I worked on the system you bloody well get through.
So what,
or else.
Yes, what would you do? Let's supposing you had got a situation where you couldn't get through. I mean, what should be the immediate actions of the signaller to improve his chances of making contact?
There are, of course, occasions when you can't get through, but...
What normally causes that? Is it ground or is it other technical?
Ground and weather.
Ground and weather.
Mm. I mean, if you've got an electric storm, for instance.
Yes.
And if you're in ground that you're in a dip or something, I mean, maybe you're just not going to get through.
Yes.
But in which case, you probably send out a relay station somewhere.
Yes. What's a station in between you and
yes.
your next station?
Yes.
That's one measure you can take, isn't it? Attempt to relay. what other things could you do to improve your chances?
Oh, fiddle about with the aerials, fiddle about with the tuning, change frequencies. Mm. Those are the main things, I would think. And, of course, drill and drill and drill the operators.
What, you said you had about 50 in your signals unit. Presumably this was a platoon at headquarters. Was this at battalion headquarters?
Well, it was technically a signals platoon, but they were sort of farmed out around the companies.
Yes.
Each company had a corporal and a little team of signalers. And I had a sort of little team at battalion headquarters, and there was a team in the echelon. we just deployed people to the best advantage. Mm. My recollection is we were a total of about 50, but that may be over-egging it a bit.
How many stations did you have on the regimental net?
Ooh, what a question. Well, the companies, to start with, the commanding officer, the second in command, the
That's
intelligence
five,
officer,
six,
a gunner,
seven,
an armoured merchant,
eight,
a sapper if he was attached, I suppose it was around 10 to 12 as a rule, something of that sort.
Did you send radio down below company level at all?
Yes, platoons had their radios, but they were not on the battalion net, of course. As a rule, they could be transferred to the battalion net, but they were usually on the company net.
Yeah, so you had sets down to platoon level, not yet to section level, presumably.
Manpacks could be at section level, yes.
Was it common practice to have wireless at section level, or did that come later?
I'm pausing for thought. I think they had section sets. Mm. I think.
Presumably each section would have its own vehicle.
Yes.
Because you were armoured infantry, weren't you, effectively?
Yes.
In half track.
Well, motor infantry, I prefer to call infantry, rather than armoured infantry.
So you weren't in armoured vehicles of any sort?
Only the half track.
You were in the half track, yes. So, in fact, you'd have a very large number of sets within the battalion, because if every section had a set.
Yes, they had a little thing called an 88 set.
Yes.
Which is a FM thing.
Yes.
The platoon level had a 31 set plus an 88 set. And then the company level had a 19 set plus 31 set for foot operations and so on. Mm. We had an awful lot of radios, and I absolutely can't remember the total number, but there were a lot. And of course they all had to be maintained.
Another implication of having so many stations on the battalion net, let's suppose you've got a dozen or so stations, is the necessity for very strict discipline to avoid jamming.
Yes.
The whole network.
It brings you straight back to RT procedure.
Yes.
Insisting on it being right.
Yeah. Another implication of having so many sets is that you've got to have a lot of signallers and you've got to actually train them up.
Yes.
How did you go about choosing your signallers and training them?
I think to an extent companies were asked to provide volunteers. And of course, if they'd been using sets themselves within the company and had seen something work because the radio would work properly and so on, I think we got quite a good reputation in the battalion for being a useful mob to be with. And I think a certain number of people volunteered, but by and large it was a matter of looking through the sort of intelligent records. I mean, when I say intelligence, I mean individual intelligence records, and trying to select people who you thought would make it.
When you were selecting people, besides having a reasonable level of intellectual capability, what other qualities would you look for in a good signaller?
Stamina, resilience, and ability to get on with people, I think, were the main things, probably.
Well, why the stamina?
Because you sat on a radio set for hours on end. I mean, I quite often, at battalion headquarters, was doing 21-hour shifts. I mean, obviously one got out to have a pee and that sort of thing, but sitting there for long, long numbers of hours.
In the command post?
Yeah, in the command vehicle, yes.
And what about the use of telephone? I mean, did you make a lot of use of that in the battalion?
Not a lot is the answer to that. I mean, when it was appropriate, we laid a line. And we always used to have a line sort of to the gunner headquarters and the armoured headquarters, which would be, you know, very close. But as far as the companies were concerned, line was exceptional rather than usual. But people were taught to do it and taught to use it.
What sort of circumstances were appropriate for the use of line?
Well, if you knew you were going to be somewhere for, I suppose, 24 hours or more. But most of the exercise we were doing at that time, we weren't static for that long.
And were there any differences in the sort of voice procedures and so on you used online as opposed to wireless?
I think it would be an exaggeration to say we used any voice procedure on the telephone at all.
It was just a chat line.
Yes. But operationally necessary if it was laid.
Once you'd selected a man for training as a signaller, roughly how long would it take to bring him up to speed and make him a useful?
Well, I seem to remember that we ran courses for about, it was between 2 and 3 months, is my recollection. They were quite tough courses, and again, we insisted on people getting 100% right procedure, and that took hours. And then we set them out on exercises and sort of let them experiment with different aerial settings and different sort of locations and so on and see how they could get the best out of their radios.
Were these specifically signals exercises or were they integrated into more general?
No, these were specific signal course exercises.
Mm-hmm. What sort of distances would you spread them out, you know, when you were training them for this sort of thing?
I think we probably started very close, 3 miles, 5 miles, something of that sort. I think eventually we were probably doing 15, 18, 20, that sort of thing.
What sort of form would the exercise take? Would you just tell them to go off to a certain point and make contact?
Initially, yes, well, in the very simple stages, yes. Yeah. All they were required to do was to set up shot and make contact and maintain contact through, a 24-hour period. Through night in particular, when all the crackling started and the terrible noise started on the radio.
Well, what is it that causes all this trouble at night with radio communication?
I haven't the faintest idea what the technical answer to that is. All I do know is that if you're using the old-fashioned sets on the medium wave band, you get a lot of noise. Mm. I mean, really a great deal of noise.
You mentioned that you weren't doing much in the way of static exercises or training with the battalion that time. So what sort of exercises and training was the battalion doing?
This, of course, was before everybody went nuclear, in inverted commas. I think we were doing things... There's a famous phrase called advance to contact.
Mm-hmm. One of the phases of war.
One of the phases of war. And there's another one called withdrawal.
Yes.
I think we did quite a lot of both those. I suppose we did a certain amount of attack and defense, I suppose. I think it was, if I recollect correctly, a lot of it was done at company level. Sort of company armoured troop level, trying to get the battle drills right with those two arms. And then I suppose at battalion level we were trying to get the battalion squadron level mix right. And so in order to do that, I think it was mainly mobile exercises rather than static ones, is my recollection.
Did you spend a lot of time out in the field?
Yes.
And you mentioned operating at company and troop level. Presumably this means you were exercising jointly with your armour.
Yes.
Who were your usual armoured support? Or didn't you have a usual armoured support? I mean, was it, did they pick and mix these company stroke troop teams and battalion squadron teams, or did they try and ensure that you were usually exercising alongside the same armoured unit?
I'm just trying to remember. I think there was a certain amount of pick and mix, but on the other hand, there was also a certain amount of regular affiliations. One Royal Tanks and 5 Royal Tanks, I remember. And I can't remember who the 3rd Regiment was. But it was a cavalry regiment rather than the Royal Tanks. But I certainly remember 1 and 5.
What kind of tanks did they have at that time?
Sherman, I suppose. I would almost certainly Sherman. I don't recollect for sure.
So it's a familiar vehicle to you?
Yes.
Had the ways and modes of cooperating between tanks and motorised infantry changed at all since the war at that stage, or were they?
I would have thought probably not.
Operating on the same principles and procedures then.
But you see, at that stage, doing my particular job as signals,
yes,
I wasn't really involved in the linkage between the armour and the infantry, and for that matter the gunners, as to exactly what they were doing in their cooperation activities.